when I was in St. Petersburg the last few days, I was lecturing in a rather unique way. That unique way was that I did not speak, but rather I typed the lecture on a screen, and Mahashaya translated it directly off the screen as if he was translating my spoken word. So it was rather unusual because it was rather a written text. So it was like he was translating a book on the spot. Obviously not as well written as a book because it was a spontaneous composition in writing, which is more difficult because in speaking you can correct things rapidly. You can say, oh, that wasn't right, or in writing after you've written the sentence, it's hard to erase it all and start all over again, especially when it's live. But one thing that was significant for me to realize was that when I speak, I am also listening. And I think this point is relevant to all of us, therefore I'm sharing it. When I speak, I'm listening. And when I'm listening to what I say, it affects me. I become, at the same time, the speaker and a member of the audience. And because of that, it allows me to see and hear what I'm saying from a point of view that I don't usually experience. When I'm speaking, I'm part of the audience who listens, and at the same time, the speaker. So it is very much a co-creation because I'm listening to the way in which it resonates with the audience and how the audience responds. You, because I'm one of you. Because of that, I adjust what I'm saying rapidly. I edit what I'm saying. If what I'm saying is something that doesn't strike the audience rapidly, doesn't resonate, in other words, like when you hit a string with a hammer, like a piano does, it creates a resonance. And the frequency that is created by that striking of the hammer on the string creates the tone that we hear. So my words are striking on the strings of the consciousness of you, the audience, and because of that, it creates a tone in the room. So in one sense, not in the literal sense, but in one sense, as I speak, it creates all of this harmonic overtone and frequency and change and resonance and transformation. And because of that, I hear and I feel what is happening very rapidly. This is actually a very good thing because it makes a communication rather simple as compared to not having that feedback, continuous feedback. It's almost like bioresonance, if you've heard of it, which gives you feedback instantly, how you feel, how your body relates to a situation, how you are responding specifically to any particular stimulus, whether it's something that you have created or something that others have placed upon you or you have accepted. So a live, interactive discussion, as we are having now or as one would have in a lecture to real, not that you're not real, but to people who are physically present. just like I said, real, that's ridiculous. Of course you're real, but to me right now, you are more virtual in the sense that I can't see you. I feel you, but I can't see you. Whereas in a situation where you are physically in front of me, I see you, feel you, can hear you, and so on. Now, when I was writing, I didn't have that. And that was interesting. It was also a bit scary because I was flying solo, so to speak. I was writing without that feedback. And that was interesting. It was just me and the screen. And even though I had a feeling of the people in the room, it wasn't the same because it wasn't something inspired by the audio vibration. It wasn't this resonance of strings. It was a resonance of minds. My mind, because when I write, I live in my own mental world, or perhaps we shall say a world in which my consciousness is focused more on the intellectual translation of my own consciousness, my own feelings, my own experience, into a communication that others will read and will try to share how I feel or think. It's a completely different form of exchange than a verbal form of exchange. Even though my audience sat in front of me and was hearing immediately my translator transform my written word into a spoken word. And the reason it was so different was because it was my translator who was striking with the audio vibration on the strings of the audience. And because the audience was very aware that his vibration was not mine, they didn't respond in the same way. I found that fascinating. Because what that means is they're not responding to the words. They're not actually responding to the sound vibration of their own native language in which they are listening. And even if my translator was faithfully translating what he saw on the screen, the audience did not accept that vibration as being intimately connected with the intellectual expression that manifested from me on the screen. That was incredible. What a realization that was. It was such a fabulous experiment. I mean, forced upon me by illness, but fascinating experiment it was. So what I found was the audience was living in my intellectual communication, my intellectual expression, because they were completely focused. Rarely I would look up. I would see them. They were totally concentrated. They were totally connected. They weren't fidgeting. They weren't moving. They weren't looking for excuses to leave. They were completely concentrated on what I was, quote unquote, saying. And I felt that too. But I didn't feel it in the same way I usually did. It was like we were sharing an intellectual space and consciousness. That was very rare for me because I don't relate to people that way. Just like when I was asked to write something. I don't like to write. I've never liked to write. It's not something I like to do. And I don't really understand why. Or I didn't. Now I do. I used to think it's because I had to sit all day in front of the computer and type and it hurt. Okay, that's true. But I sat in front of that computer screen and I typed for a long time. And it was the same effort, the same screen. Didn't bother me at all. Okay, it bothered me after about 45 minutes, an hour. I started getting pain in my neck. But it didn't discourage me. I understood when I was not in that experience anymore after I left that the reason I don't like to write is because my contact with my audience is not there. I don't know to whom this communication is directed. But when I was in that experience of writing for that specific audience, I knew exactly who the communication was meant for. And I was getting an intellectual stimulation on the topics. And strangely enough, I started talking about things like telepathy. I never have ever talked about telepathy. In all of these years, we have been broadcasting. All of these years of lecturing, never once have I talked about telepathy. And yet, when I was writing and we were having a communication in that intellectual sphere, I talked about telepathy. It was natural because that's what was happening. We were having a telepathic connection, not necessarily in the term of words or sound. Because again, the translator, his sound and those words were not directly connected to the audience. But the intellectual atmosphere we created was. And then again, we started talking about the creation of dimensional space and the living in that dimensional space. And that was because Shiva and I, who are, by the way, a band, and the other person, his name is Shiva. Somebody said that when I talked about playing with Shiva, they thought I was playing with the deity, Mahadev. I said, oh my God, I wonder what myth is being created. Because I wasn't playing with Mahadev, I mean, not consciously anyway. I was playing with Shiva, the person, Mamed, who was sitting next to me when we played. Anyway, so the two of us are playing, and we are creating a dimensional space. And you enter into that dimensional space created by sound. And we expand the limits of the perceivable dimension. Stupid reason it stopped recording me. No, man. I hate when it does that. We've lost basically 5 minutes of me. Okay, anyway, such is life. So the point being that this very interesting experiment in reality was a wonderful way in which I came to understand how we are relating as, not only as people but as speaker and audience. And these interactions were only apparent because I was forced into this new methodology of communication. And I understood from this the reason I don't like to write, the reason why even when I'm forced to write, I have a hard time, is because I don't have my audience in front of me. I don't feel the interaction. I don't hear the resonance. Perhaps it's because I am, first of all, an artist. More of an artist than a teacher or expresser or whatever. And I like to feel the resonance of the vibrations on the heartstrings and the consciousness strings of the audience, and to play together with that and evolve, like our music, which is totally spontaneous and without expectation. We have no idea where we're going. So it's played that way in the resonance of the vibrating strings of all the participants, molds it into its own unique package. So I understood that when I write, the only personality there to resonate with who has a physical body is me. And then I start resonating with perhaps beings or entities that are not of this dimension, who do not exist in my physical space, who I connect to by being in harmony with their other dimensional spaces. And therefore, when I write, if I'm going to properly express my self, in other words, rather than thinking of my audience as some group who needs to hear some expression, something that's not at the cutting edge of my evolution, but something that is way back there, so that I can share with them something which is good for them. So that means I presume an audience. I presume that this audience is some group, and I target what I'm saying to that group. It's not satisfying to me. It would be similar to me playing the blues. Now, there's nothing wrong with the blues. It's a very established, well-known, and filled with variety in its own particular way, media of playing music. There are hundreds of different ways and adaptations of the blues. And I love blues guitar. I have nothing against the blues, but I can't play it. Not because of technical reasons. It doesn't relate to me. I'm not a blues guy. It drives me crazy to hear the blues sometimes, or to be forced to play it for more than 5 minutes. I lose my mind. I don't know why. I just start boiling inside like a volcano, saying, crack the structure. Crack this expected series of notes and tones which you've heard a billion times and you know exactly what's coming. Crack this idea to follow and live within the package of this genre. Rebel against the genre. So the idea is that I like things which relate to me. So if I'm going to be forced to write, don't ask me to write about something that's not me, or something that I am not into, or I am not in, and I am not about, or even something that doesn't relate to the moment of the creation of some written material, because I can't do it. When I wrote what I wrote, that little itsy-bitsy thing that maybe 68 pages in English that was put into that book in Russian, I was actually expressing how I see it. So it was not meant as a simple way for people to understand something. It was really an expression of how I think. And it was very difficult to put it down in writing because I had to experience my consciousness and translate it into the written word. And because there was nobody else to bounce off of, I had to perceive the fundamental principles which made my consciousness what it was. So it was a lot of work. It was exhausting to even do that. And it's only like one third finished, but I couldn't go on. It was too much work. I'm not necessarily a lazy person, but that was difficult for me. And doing this business with the lectures, I understood why, because it was just me. How boring can you get living just in my own head? Not my nature. I don't live in my head. I don't live in my consciousness. Okay, I do to us. Obviously, everybody does. But I mean, I don't like to just use that as my focus of attention. I like to move away from my consciousness into someplace else which inspires me or stimulates me. So this idea of sharing in a written format with an audience was fantastic because I talked about things I would never talk about if I was speaking. If I was to speak and share, I edit myself. I hold myself back. I steer what I'm saying. I adjust it rapidly to my audience so that they fit in within. But when I'm writing, I don't do that. I didn't edit. So we got into things which I never got into before and which were really fabulous subjects, like the way in which telepathy takes place. I can boil down the whole thing into a paragraph. I can say the process of telepathy depends on, and then you put a colon and then you put bullet points. And list, you make a list. And list point number one. It depends on one being very much aware of, connected to, harmonically vibrating with one's essence. This means a complete acceptance of the self, not trying to push or place or project oneself outside of one's sphere of energy, to fully embrace and accept one's sphere of energy. Point number one. Point number two, to be so confident of that connection and so empathetic with others that one can simply accept them as they are, without judging them or demanding them to be different or forcing them to transform in relation to yourself, forcing them, but to rather embrace their space, embrace their essence, their consciousness, without interfering with it or trying to change it. That would be distorting them. So basically, one and two are points of acceptance. So is point three. Point one, you accept yourself. Point two, you accept someone else. Point three, what in heaven's name is this? Please don't write me instant messages right now. It makes a horrible noise. Are you there? Uh-huh. Yeah. So point three is to just listen, to just listen. To simply listen to what someone else is presenting, what somebody else is expressing. I don't only mean verbally or orally. I mean energetically. And on that space, that etheric space and energy we all share, to accept the thought that is within the energy. Because every energetic expression has thought connected to it. People do not express energetically without a thought behind it, because the thought carries their intention. So you have thought with the energy. So if you accept the energy and your own acceptance process of in your consciousness is open, you will accept the thought that comes with the energy. In other words, you just simply feel the energy of the other, and the thought floats on that energy. So you accept that thought and tune your listening capacity to that thought. Once you accept, you are telepathic. Telepathy is not something that you need to do broadcast and reception of. It's something you simply have to learn the reception of it. Because if the other party receives you, then you have a communication, is it not? You can be the most powerful on earth broadcaster of thought. But if the others cannot receive, what's the use? But if the others have highly attuned themselves to accepting like this, and you have as well, then there is a two-way communication based on acceptance. So points 1, 2, and 3 are all about acceptance. When you accept like this, and you are in association with someone else who does the same, it's telepathy. It's not a mystery. It's actually simple. That's why on other platforms, people are communicating in that way. They don't need words. Now, the next point I made was about these creation of dimensions, because when you have such capacities as acceptance, you expand the acceptance to accepting the physical, emotional, intellectual, and intentional energetic expression and creation of others. This is way beyond telepathy. This is point 4, the complete acceptance of everything that is there in another and in yourself and in your environment. When you do that, which is also not a difficult thing, again, it's just accepting it. You just accept it. You just accept it. You just tune to it. Accept it without transformation. If you and another person agree to tune in a particular way, you are creating a dimensional space. And in that space, it's only you and the other person, because you are vibrating in a unique fashion. And because It is a multidimensional acceptance and connection. There is thought transferal, sure, but there's feeling transferal. There's intention transferal. And as you accept that space more and more, it creates another dimension. And in that you can move wherever you like. That's why both Shiva and I recommend that if you listen to our music, you don't drive a car or heavy machinery. Because God only knows where you're going to end up. If you actually tune to what we do, you're going to be placed somewhere else. And while you're placed in that place, you don't want to be doing things that demand connection and concentration to physical reality. Otherwise, you'll make mistakes. Now, when we create spaces like that, if someone else happens to be vibrating on our very specific frequency, they enter into our dimension. And because they are vibrating in that way, immediate embrace and acceptance is there. And as that expands, our world, our dimensional world expands. And we create this wonderful space, this dimensional space. Now we can also connect to the space and dimension and transform ourselves of the devas, for instance, where our consciousness and our energy, even our telepathic acceptance, connects with devas. And we move into another dimension, just like it has been called in Vedic literature, worlds, or lokas, or other planets, or, like the higher, middle, and lower, and whatever. These are expected, shall we say, accepted and expected phrases and words to designate these places are not here. They're somewhere, here, there, and everywhere. The words and phrases are useless at telling us where they are. That's just understood. But what they do say is something's over there, and something's over there, and something's over there. So we know they're not here. If you want to be in the space of these devas, you have to go into their dimension. The process is exactly the same. You accept, you resonate, and you transform your own vibration by that resonance, and you enter the dimension of the deva. And, as you are waiting for me to say, you do it the same with the divine, all these beings divine, but with Radha and Krishna, or Gornatai, or Lord Nrsingadev, or Vishnu, or Sitaram, or Hanuman, or whoever you want. You go, and you connect, and you live in whatever dimension you want. These dimensions are created by the communal agreement of those who live there. This is how Goloka became and becomes Goloka. This is how all these various groups or sects or whoever they are have their own unique take on their heaven. They have been for so long cultivating that dimension that they have a very developed place where they want to be and where they live very nicely together. It's not mysterious. It's actually very logical, scientific. And that's good, because if it's too mysterious, then people tend to just disregard it as fantasy. It's not at all fantasy, and in fact, you can experience it yourself. You can do it yourself and be wherever you want to be at will, when your consciousness wishes. Isn't that nice? I think it's nice. And all of this I wish to say only because I lost my voice. So sometimes these physical challenges have a deeper purpose. Sometimes these physical challenges are meant because we have not expressed what we should express. We have not touched what we should have touched. We have not experienced what we should have experienced. What we are meant to, what we have decided we would before we even entered into this life. And also what others are gently pushing us towards as they act as helping hands to us to go where we should go and be what we should be. I think that was worth some laryngitis.